This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
Judiciary Committee of the Senate will come to order. Good morning, everyone. It's nice to see a full house. Sorry we don't have enough chairs, apparently, for everybody. But, hey, got to be here early to get the chairs. So, welcome anyway. Reminder to silence your communications devices, if you would, please. If you're going to testify, sign in at the podium at the back. With that, Madam Secretary, if you'll call the roll, please.
Senator Bradford?
Here.
Heinert? Monroe?
Here.
Rush?
Here.
Valley?
Here.
Nordstrup?
Here.
Teason?
Here. Thank you. Before we get into today's agenda, if you want to grab your pens and pencils, if you're interested in the schedule of events for future meetings, I think we have three more scheduled meetings for this committee. And of course, this will include all the bills that we've got through yesterday. Obviously, still have a day or two to potentially get bills from the House side. But here's the schedule. On this Thursday, on February 25th, HCR 1004, followed by House Bill 1107. Tuesday, March 1, House Concurrent Resolution 1009, as well as House Bills 1135, 1129, 1138, and 1125. On Thursday, March 3rd, House Bills 1077, 1078, 1064, and 1244. In addition to that, we have two appointments to the Board of Pardons and Paroles that we have to work in yet with the assigning authority. So that's where we're at with our schedule. At the moment, we have some busy days ahead. Before we get go further into the agenda, if we could have the pages. We have new pages starting this week. If you would identify yourselves and tell us where you're from and what your plans are. Thank you.
My name is Megan Simon, and I'm from Gettysburg High School, and I plan to go to SDSU next year for pharmacy.
Welcome.
My name is Josh Weinheimer. I'm from Oneida, and I plan to go to SDSU next year for mechanical engineering.
Thank you. There is another engineering school in South Dakota as well. We can talk more about that later. A good choice, nonetheless. And we have a third page. I think she's out of the room at the moment. All right, on to today's agenda. Oh, I'm sorry. Minutes from last week's meeting.
So moved
to approve by Senator Rush, seconded by Senator Nordstrup. Any discussion on the minutes? Hearing none, those in favor of approving the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried. Minutes are approved. Thanks for keeping me on track. All right, today's schedule. Senate Bill 89 was withdrawn yesterday by the prime sponsor. We're going to alter the agenda slightly. Take up Senate Bill 163 first, followed by 168, and then 169. So unless there's anything else, we'll start with our agenda. Senate Bill 163 to require the disclosure of certain cumulative contracts with the state. Proponent testimony on Senate Bill 163. Good morning, Senator Parsley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I've never been before this committee before. My name is Scott Parsley. I'm a state senator from District 8 in Lake, Minor, Moody, and Sanborn counties. Mr. Chairman, I would just relate back to one of your earlier comments about getting here early to get a chair. As always with the church situation, there were chairs in the front row, but people chose to stand instead of sit in the front row. So, ladies and gentlemen, or gentlemen of the committee, I would like to first of all, start out today by saying that We brought Senate Bill 163 as an opportunity to have a little bit more transparency in our contracting process in South Dakota. As you know, contracts under $50,000 aren't bid, and the process of identifying those contracts, in our opinion, or my opinion, was somewhat cumbersome, and we wanted to just bring a little more transparency to that. When the bill surfaced, the Bureau of Administration came and visited with me about the contracts that they handle, and most of those are contracts for paper, tires, those kinds of things that you would think of in the administration side. And they indicated that really the group that runs or has most of the activity in OpenSD, which is our website to find out about contracts, is the Bureau of Finance and Management. And I want to commend both of those agencies, and particularly Christy Honeywell and Colin Keeler, for coming up with an idea of how we can streamline this process and make it much more transparent. So this morning, eventually, I'm going to ask you to table this bill, but I would like to ask Mr. Keeler to come up and just talk about some of the plans that they have. We do have a handout for the committee, and just take a few minutes to walk through that. I could do it, but I'm not an IT person, and I know I would do something wrong. So if I could ask Mr. Keeler to come up and join me at the table, we would walk through that very briefly with the committee, and then we will ask for the bill to be tabled.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Senator Teason and members of the committee. I, like Senator Parsley, have not been in front of this committee for 8 to 10 years, I don't think. I'm more comfortable down on third floor in appropriations. But my name is Colin Keeler. I'm with the Bureau of Finance and Management. I do have a handout here that if I could get some assistance from Paige that I'd like to walk you through a little bit. I want to be clear that I'm not appearing as a proponent of 163, but I am a proponent of helping Senator Parsley achieve some of his transparency desires. Today, I'll wait for the handouts to get around, but today OpenSD shows images of contracts that are required under SDCL 12746, but in order to find the contract that you're interested in, the user has to know the vendor or the agency that the contract is with, and then the user also has to open up the contracts and actually view images of the contract, and that may mean that you have to read hundreds of pages, you know, conceivably. Every contract might be structured a little bit differently. So if you look at side one of your handout, which is the one with an orange heading that says current contract search on OpenSD. This is just kind of an example that I put together for you to show some of the, I think, the difficulties that Senator Parsley was talking about and that we want to try to make better. And to be clear, the Bureau of Finance and Management and the Bureau of Administration are all about transparency. We're very proud of the improvements we've made to our open government website. We've increased our grade from a D- a few years back to an A- today, and we think that some of Senator Parsley's ideas and some other things that we're working on are going to continue to increase the transparency of state government. So what I did here was I did a search for a vendor that BFM uses. I wanted to use just one of my own vendors as an example. And the vendor is called Infor Global Solutions, and I searched for the word Infor, and you'll see it brought up a list of contracts, a variety of different contracts, some of them with vendors who the word information is contained in there. But the two that I circled are the two for the vendor in question. But I hypothetically don't know which one of those contracts I'm trying to find information out about. So I would have to open them up, read them, and ascertain the answers to my questions. And if you, the arrow just shows you this, the information that's available about the contract today, which is just some basic information besides the image of the contract. So if I'd have you flip to the second page, which has a purple heading on it, it says proposed enhancements. What we would propose to do and continue to work with Senator Parsley on ideas on how we can make this more searchable is to add the dollar amount of the contract and a short description of the contract to the data that agencies put into the system that feeds OpenSD. You can see this information if you read the contracts, but what we want to do is make it easier for the users to be able to search on it. So the top screen there shows a shot that would have, these are mock-up screens that I just kind of doctored up as how we'd probably make these things look, would show the dollar amounts and then a description, and that would allow users to be able to search for words in the description of the contract, because you may know that you're looking for a contract about a subject, but you don't know what agency or what vendor that contract's with. That would also allow us to provide a list, much like we do today with payments. We could provide that list of contracts. You could select any given vendor. The state has about 45 to 50,000 vendors in our accounting system at any one time. And you could get a list of all contracts for that specific vendor. And that's kind of what the bottom example shows. Has the dollar amounts ranging from $255 up to $409,000. We have a total shown on this page. You can see the descriptions of the contract, and then more quickly zero in on the one that maybe you're interested in actually reading, and then you could still open up the actual document itself. So with that, members of the committee, I don't really have any other information, but this is something that we want to continue working on, and we told Senator Parsley that we'd be happy to do this as we move past session.
Thank you. Do you have any timeline of when this might be implemented?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. We did talk about that briefly. We have already started, obviously, thinking about this, and I've got some people looking at what changes we need to make. It does play a little bit into Senate Bill 162, which is came out of State Affairs yesterday, which deals with grants. We're going to do something similar with pass-through grant information that will be posted on OpenSD. So we'll probably tie those two development steps together. My goal would be, and I've told Senator Parsley, that I would have this part done before July 1.
Thank you. And I presume, Senator, you've appointed yourself as the self-proclaimed monitor of the progress of this project?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Parsley, District 8 State Senator. Certainly, I'm going to work with the departments and continue this good relationship that we have and make sure that we have the transparency that we're looking for.
Thank you. Senator Valley.
Real quick, you said we had a D minus, and now we're an A minus. Who gives the grade? I just didn't hear who the teacher was.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Senator Valley. There is a group, there are a number of self-proclaimed watchdog groups out there. The one with the most credibility and that has the most widely, I guess, accepted grades is called the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. They publish a report every year that lists all state government grades, and I think the governor even referred to it in his State of the State this year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further comments? Seeing none, Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With all good due, I move to table Senate Bill 163.
Motion by Senator Bradford to table, seconded by Senator Monroe. Non-debatable motion. All those in favor of the motion to table say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senator Valley.
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Heinert? Bradford?
Aye.
Northrup?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye. Motion carried. Senate Bill 163 is tabled. Okay, we'll move now to Senate Bill 168 to revise provisions related to human trafficking and to provide a penalty therefor. Proponent testimony. Senator Holine, good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. First, I'd like to point out your attention to some handouts from the pages. And I think that she has enough. If she doesn't, I have one more copy for Senator Bradford. I didn't mean to overlook you. Okay. Actually, there is one more for you. And this is just some added information. I know that the members of this committee are well aware of the crime of human trafficking and the scourge of evil that it is upon the world and America and even South Dakota today. Just for the sake of the people in the audience, if you would indulge me just a moment to give some brief synopsis. Human trafficking is essentially a form of modern-day slavery where people use force, fraud, coercion, addiction to drugs, threats, and whatever else they have in their arsenal to gain power over another person to force them to do whatever they would wish. Now, very often that manifests itself in one of two ways, either forced labor, which is slavery in the way that we would normally identify it historically, but also, and in the context of Senate Bill 168, we are going to talk much more along the lines of sexual human trafficking, where someone, mostly girls, but the numbers say that there is almost 20% of boys, most all of them are underage, are being forced into sexual servitude. So this is not a nice situation, nor are these nice people that we are talking about trying to go after right here. What Senate Bill 168 does is, to start off, there's a couple minor changes. In Section 1, Line 5, we add receive. Now, this is, depending upon how you look at it, this might actually be redundant with the word obtain, because sometimes you can list them as synonyms, but in looking around at human trafficking statutes in other states, some states actually do add the receive as well as obtain. And in my reading of it, basically what I found is that it does no harm and it could do some good, because receive implies that there was no money exchanging hands in the obtaining of human trafficking victims or goods exchanged or anything like that. What this would allow authorities to do, let's say if there was, and there have been instances where pimps are bringing in girls from out of state into South Dakota, let's say for hunting season or for the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally, and they are being transferred to someone in South Dakota, now that is not, the person in South Dakota is not actually obtaining them, but they are receiving them for sake of transporting them somewhere else or things like that. Now, they are still complicit in the crime. You still have to prove it, that they know that this is, that they know what they're doing. But it would allow law enforcement a tool, let's say in a sting operation. Fortunately, our feds and our state have been very good at being out front with human trafficking and learning about it before it gets too bad. But in this case, it would allow them to know about the crime and, let's say, bust it at the time of the transaction. So it doesn't do any harm and it could possibly help. Section 2, line 12 corrects a misspelling of the word kidnapping that we found last year, so I don't anticipate too many problems with that one. Section 2, line 13, we change the age of a victim from 16 or under 16 to under 18. Now, this might seem like to some that this could be a big deal, but this is actually only bringing us into compliance with federal statutes. That's all it is, because right now, if you're busted on a state level, you could, let's say if the victim is 17, you could actually be prosecuted or handled completely differently than if you were busted by feds. And almost all human trafficking cases are taken over by the feds. We have a member of the Attorney General's office here. He will attest to that almost all human trafficking crimes are taken over by the feds, whether or not they are busted by South Dakota law enforcement. So changing this actually brings it into compliance with the federal statutes and therefore prevents some sort of confusion that could result. Then we have a new section, Section 3, that goes after the Johns, which is a term for people who buy sex from human trafficking victims. Currently in South Dakota statute, it is a Class 1 misdemeanor to purchase or attempt to purchase or solicit sex from anybody. Now, that's even from someone who is willing to sell it. Unfortunately, human trafficking victims are not really willing to sell it. They don't want to. They are being forced into this lifestyle. And very often, as you can read in the handouts, this is a completely different form of prostitution. This is not where someone is standing on the street making themselves available, or in a house where you can come and talk with them, or not that I know much about it, but I do know what human trafficking manifests itself as, and this is a completely different thing. Oftentimes, the victims are chained to a bed, they're strung out on drugs, they are crying, weeping. Almost always, they are underage. Very often, they are of minorities. As you can see in one of the handouts, part of the reason why South Dakota does have an issue is because of some of our areas. And so basically, this is a different form of prostitution. And the Johns, unfortunately, some of them like it that way. And you will see in one of the handouts of a Texas air controller coming to the Sturgis rally and attempting to hire sex from someone who was advertised as a 12-year-old. Now, that is not your normal college kid or someone who's just trying to purchase sex from someone who is willing to sell it. I think that we can all agree that if you're 12 years old, you're not really willing to sell sex. So that would make it, it would bump it up to a class 6 felony. But you do have to prove that the person who is purchasing it knows it and still is doing it. Okay? And I think that that's only fair, because if it's a class 1 misdemeanor to purchase or attempt to purchase from someone who's willing to and who is an adult, I think it's only right that it's a slightly worse penalty if you're trying to do it from someone who is not willing to sell it. The final section is section 4. That is basically trying to get the word out. One of the things that a lot of human trafficking groups are out there trying to do right now is get word out to the victims. It's extremely hard to let people who are forced into servitude or modern slavery, it is very hard to get them to understand that there is help available. Fortunately, in South Dakota, several groups, Rapid City, Sioux Falls, Watertown, Sisseton, and even some in the central parts of the group, have sprung up to help victims of human trafficking. But it is still very hard to get word to them that there is help available. Because they are very often they are forced into a house and they don't leave it for months, if not longer, at a time. So this targets two areas where we do believe we can actually get the word out. The first is abortion facilities, because what happens a lot of times is if someone is forced into sexual servitude and they get pregnant, the pimp doesn't want to lose their source of revenue, so they force them to have an abortion. Now, by having a poster up that just says, "This is a human trafficking hotline," at least it would give the potential for someone to see the number and call for help. The other thing is, as you will see, an adult theater. And that's basically dance clubs with nudity and things like that. This is something that does get to be much more of an issue in hunting season in South Dakota. And it is also one of the very few places where we know that trafficking victims will go. And it is one of the extremely few places where we think we can get the word out. So I know that that might be a somewhat uncomfortable subject for some, but we are trying to get these people help. And we are targeting two areas, the only two areas that I can think of where we know we can get the word out. So with that said, I would like to at least address the prison impact statement, if I may, Mr. Chair. Does the committee have that?
We do, and I'm going to ask staff to address it first, and then you can comment on it if you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we can do that after full testimony if you would like. It's up to you.
Let's just handle it. As long as you brought it up, Ms. Hammond, if you would discuss that, and then we can include that in the testimony.
Good morning. Roxanne Hammond, Legislative Attorney with the Legislative Research Council. There was a prison or jail impact statement requested for 168 due to the change of penalties or the creation of new crimes. This was a particularly difficult prison impact statement to estimate because of the nature of the crime and the requirement of intent in the second part of the crime. To start off, Senator Holine did mention that human trafficking is already illegal, and the first half of the bill that makes changes to the age and the degree of felony are actually fairly minor in the LRC's opinion as far as the prisoner jail impact. There were 10 arrests for human trafficking in the last 6 years, and zero of those led to conviction in state court. The LRC cannot speculate why there were 10 arrests but no convictions, but federal jurisdiction and other prosecutorial discretion could affect how defendants are charged under these statutes, and in the opinion of the LRC, will likely continue to do so. Going on to the second part, where it creates a new crime for knowingly soliciting a victim of human trafficking, we look to 22239, which is the current statute for hiring for sexual activity, and there were 131 arrests and 103 convictions for hiring for sexual activity in the same 6 years I just spoke about. While many victims of human trafficking are used in prostitution, it is impossible for the LRC to estimate how many of those will actually fall under the statute. And furthermore, it would be incredibly difficult to estimate how many defendants that are hiring for sexual activity would know that the prostitute is a victim of human trafficking. So what we did was we crossed the 10 arrests for human trafficking in the same period of time with 131 arrests for solicitation. And we estimated that one of every, we assumed at the maximum that one of every 13 arrests would, or two of every 13 arrests roughly would be with the intent to hire somebody for human trafficking. And then out of those, there could be possible one conviction per year, which would elevate or enhance the penalty to a class 6 felony from a class 1 misdemeanor. The average sentence for a class 6 felony is 774 days in prison versus the 66 days in jail for the class 1 misdemeanor. So therefore, assuming that one person per year would serve the entire sentence of 774 days, the cost estimate increase was roughly started out at about $7,964 the first year and then grew for the next couple years to $24,684 to have a total 10-year cost of total cost over 10 years, excuse me. Now, it is worth noting that this is a maximum assumption. As I mentioned, it's impossible for us to guess exactly how many of these with the mens rea could actually be convicted, and likely the full sentence of 774 days would not be served, but for purposes of the estimation, we assumed that that would happen, and hence the 10-year total cost.
Thank you. Senator Holeen, you can comment on that if you wish, and then we'll take further proponents.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And I would like to thank the LRC staff for putting this together. I would like to reiterate that this was an absolutely maximum, highest, worst-case scenario. Actually, I do believe all of you were on Judiciary last year when I brought Senate Bill 95, which was a simpler bill, but simply straight up made hiring or the Johns aspect, hiring sexual activity from a human trafficking victim. That just made it a class 4 felony, not a class 6. It did not have the obligation of knowingly in it, and that prison impact statement came back with no impact to the state. And I do believe that the reason why that one, which was a way harsher penalty and way more likely to actually result in a prosecution, I think the reason why that one came back with no impact to the state is because of what the prison impact statement says here is almost all of these cases are taken over by the feds, and that's because that's where the feds like taking them, because you have a lot of interstate commerce clauses and things like that, which would then possibly beg the question inside your heads as to why South Dakota should do it. Make it a class 6 felony as opposed to a class 1 misdemeanor if it might turn out to be the feds. And again, I will just go back to the people that I've talked to. Over the last several years, it has been my pleasure or displeasure, depending upon how you want to look at it, because this is not something I ever wanted to learn about in my life, nor is this something that I ever thought I would become the champion in. But I have a great group of people back home in Watertown and elsewhere across the state who have brought my attention to it, let me know about the victims, and so I've just really taken this cause on. And one of the things that they stress is, with a lot of these Johns, it's the idea of it, that you could possibly become tagged as a felon. Now, you will still be handled in federal court, But the idea that these people, these Johns, who know that they're going after people who are trafficking victims, who are modern-day slaves, it is a difference in their mindset from, oh, well, this is just a slap on the hand, it's a misdemeanor, versus I am now a felon. Okay? It's a big change in the mindset, and that's the idea that we're trying to get at here. I can't stress enough that human trafficking will continue to explode in as a problem in South Dakota and across the world until we address the demand side of the equation. There will always be bad guys willing to supply the young girls. We need to address the demand side, and that's why I say, I know that it might be slightly uncomfortable when we talk about the potential of money, but I want to put the committee's minds at rest that I don't believe that it will be anywhere near that for many reasons, and even still, it would be the right thing to do. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 168. Further proponent testimony. Morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Charlie McGuigan with the Attorney General's Office, and we do support Senate Bill 168. And I guess basically I'm just going to confirm a couple of the things that Senator Holine testified to. First of all, adding receive to our statute does bring us more in line with the federal law. If you look at 18 U.S.C. 1591A, that is the federal human trafficking statute, and it also contains the word receive. In addition, several years ago, a case that arose out of South Dakota actually set a national precedent, looked at what receive means in the federal statute, and it found that it does go to those who are on the demand side of human trafficking, that receive under the federal provision applies to those persons who are trying to purchase children for sex and human trafficking situations. I also would like to confirm what Senator Holine said as far as the role between the state and our federal counterparts in investigating and prosecuting human trafficking cases in South Dakota. There have been 10 arrests. However, in the last 2 years, we have done 8 joint operations with our federal counterparts that have resulted in 30 arrests, either at the federal or state level. So far, all of those have gone on the federal side. And the reason they're being prosecuted federally is because of the mandatory minimums that are involved with federal human trafficking, and also because if the victim is under 13, they face extremely harsh penalties. And for that reason, these cases have almost all been prosecuted federally. The last joint investigation that we did was in October. It was actually run out of Pierre, but we arrested an individual in Blount. That person has been charged in both state and federal court, and both of those prosecutions are still proceeding forward. And he may very well be the first person convicted under our state provision if the state case continues to move forward. Also, I will hearken you back to several weeks ago when the Attorney General was here talking about Senate Bill 25. Senate Bill 25 was our human trafficking bill that asked for you to grant or extend our forfeiture authority to persons convicted of the federal human trafficking offenses. And again, the reason we ask that is because many of these cases are being prosecuted federally, yet we want the authority in these joint cases that we work with our federal counterparts, we want the authority to forfeit the assets that are being involved in the human trafficking activity. And so that was the purpose of Senate Bill 25. We do think it is beneficial to have a state counterpart to our federal statutes. It's very similar to what occurs in drug cases. There are federal statutes that mirror our state statutes, and we often work together with our federal counterparts in drug investigations. And after we make an arrest, we work together to decide where the best place to prosecute an individual is. Sometimes there may be an evidentiary issue that exists in federal court that may not exist in state court, and therefore a case needs to proceed forward in state court, and I think the same thing is true with this bill. It does not hurt anything to have a state counterpart to the federal human trafficking provisions, and the more in line we can make those, the more beneficial it is for all of the persons who are trying to stop this activity. And therefore, we do support Senate Bill 168, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 168. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I do have a handout. Morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Dale Barcher, registered lobbyist with the Family Heritage Alliance Action. We do stand in support of SB 168. The handout that you're receiving today is an educational piece from the FHA Action on the issue of human trafficking in the state of South Dakota. I believe to best understand what we're talking about here today, I think it's really interesting to note, as you turn to the opening, a paragraph of the brochure that you have before you. This is the national definition of human trafficking. It's one paragraph long, and it reads, "Human trafficking is the commercial exploitation of individuals for sex or labor through the use of force, fraud, or coercion, or when the victim is under the age of 18. Notice the national definition reads, under the age of 18. We are certainly grateful to Senator Holeen for bringing this bill. By the way, it is the only bill this legislative session that will address or even attempt to strengthen our human trafficking laws and statutes here in the state of South Dakota. We believe that SB 168 is prudent. It is a measured bill which only but seeks to protect in a greater way the juvenile, the most vulnerable members of our society who find themselves victimized by this criminal activity. We really appreciate as well the educational aspect of this bill. We think it's notable. So we would certainly ask for you to lend your support to SB 168. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 168. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Linda Schauer, State Director for Concerned Women for America Legislative Action Committee. Human trafficking is the second largest form of organized crime, and we at CWA support any measure used to strengthen our laws that would decrease this form of human slavery. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony. Any more proponents for Senate Bill 168? Seeing none, we'll move to opponents. Opponents, Senate Bill 168. Seeing no opponents, we'll move to questions. Any questions from the committee? Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe a question of good senator. I see in your article a notation of Native American women are especially susceptible. I wondered, do they identify themselves as Native American to the victims? Is that kind of a
go ahead,
Mr. Chair? Good question, Senator Bradford. Not to my knowledge, do they identify themselves as Native Americans? So my answer would be more circumspectual, more just an idea. From what I have read and from what I understand, a lot of the Johns who go after human trafficking victims do so because they have certain qualities to them. So it would not surprise me if some of them do target Native American women for that reason. But I have absolutely no proof for that.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Senator Valley.
Mr. McGuigan, please. As I'm reading through here, is there any difference now between Or just tell me the difference. What is going to be a Class 6 felony and what is going to be a Class 1 misdemeanor? Or does Class 1 misdemeanor go out for any of these crimes? If you could explain that for us. I didn't quite understand that.
Go ahead.
Senator Valley, soliciting a prostitute will still be a Class 1 misdemeanor. In addition to have the, in order to prove the Class 6 felony, we're going to have to show that that's a human trafficking situation, which means we're going to have to show one of the criteria that exists in Section 2 of the bill is present. We're going to have to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. Generally, that there's force, fraud, or coercion involved, that the victim's a minor. Those are the type of things that we're going to have to prove. However, the Class 1 misdemeanor will still exist, and that's solicitation of prostitution.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony and move to committee discussion and action. Senator Rush.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move a due pass.
Second. Senator Rush moves due pass, seconded by Senator Nordstrup. Discussion on that motion. Senator Rush.
You know, this is obviously a significant problem from the testimony that we've heard in the enclosed materials, and you know, I think that this is at least a first step towards moving forward to try and cracking down a little bit harder on it.
Thank you. Further discussion on the due pass motion? Seeing no further discussion, the question is due pass on Senate Bill 168. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Valley.
Aye.
Rush.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Heinert. Bradford.
Aye.
Nordstrup.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye. Motion carried. All right, we'll move now to Senate Bill 169, to revise provisions related to child pornography and to revise the penalty therefor. Proponent testimony, Senate Bill 169. Welcome back, Senator Holeen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
First appearance in front of the committee and a twofer.
Actually, I was here a couple weeks ago for, I can't remember which bill now. It was a good bill,
that's
I'm
right.
sure.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senate Bill 169 was a bill that kind of came out in my reading to try to understand better human trafficking laws. Human trafficking laws let's say, crimes that deal with sex in South Dakota, for non-lawyers like myself, can be kind of hard to understand because you have to kind of cross-apply into different sections of code. And this was just something that kind of came up in my reading. The first section, Section 1, Line 8, changes selling child pornography from a Class 6 to a Class 4. Now, that actually is not that big of a deal because currently in South Dakota law, it is a Class 4 felony to create or distribute child pornography, but it's a Class 6 to sell it, which to me just didn't make any sense. It's already covered pretty much in the distribution aspect of it, probably, but again, this is just a tool that does no harm and could possibly do some good. The other section is a slight change, page 2, line 1, where it's basically saying any person is guilty of solicitation of a minor if that person knowingly compiles or transmits by means of a computer or prints, publishes, or reproduces by other computerized means. And all I do is I add or any other electronic means. Now, this is basically just kind of an umbrella to give prosecution a tool to go after people who are going to use whatever forms of electronic communication may be coming along the pike in another year, 2 years, 3 years, something like that. It's basically a proactive step to help prosecution go after people who are soliciting a minor. We'll just leave it at that. I do have an amendment that was distributed.
169 FA, you can speak to that as well. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This was actually brought to me by some of the providers, internet providers, and they basically just wanted to make sure that they would not be held liable for basically just providing the internet or electronic service, and that I thought was a very reasonable thing to do. I mean, they're just providing internet. Now, what someone chooses to do with it, that's the person that we want to go after. It's kind of like you don't prosecute someone for selling a car if someone chooses to drive it drunk. You don't go after the car lot. So I thought it was a very reasonable amendment when it was brought to me, so this is a friendly amendment. And with that, I would urge the committee's approval of Senate Bill 169.
Thank you. Before we go further, let's take up the prison impact statement at this point. Go ahead.
Good morning again. Roxanne Hammond, legislative attorney. The LRC prepared a prison impact statement for 169 as well due to the change from a Class 6 to a Class 4 felony in the part of the statute that makes it illegal to sell child pornography. As the senator stated, this is just, it's a fairly minor change, and there were no arrests under the statute for the last 6 years. Therefore, it was the opinion of the LRC that this will not bring any additional jail or prison impact. The bill also adds by any other electronic means to the part of the statute that prohibits the transmission of personally identifiable information of a minor for purposes of solicitation of a minor. There were 188 arrests and 39 convictions under this statute between January 1st, 2010 and December 31st, 2015. However, because this statute also prohibits the solicitation of a minor for sexual acts, in addition to the transmission of the minor's personal information, it's impossible for us to distinguish under which part of the statute these arrests or convictions were made. Therefore, that is not exactly a stable number to use for estimates. It is the belief of the LRC that the change to the statute is for purposes of clarification, as the senator mentioned, to ensure that devices such as cell phones or cell phone applications or other newer technology is not overlooked when being used to transfer this information. Therefore, because this is a minor change, the LRC believes that this will be a relatively low impact and the prisoner jail costs will be negligible.
Thank you. Senator Holey, and I presume you don't want to dispute that prison impact statement? All right. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 169. Further proponent testimony? Welcome back.
Oops. Linda Schauer, State Director for Concerned Women for America Legislative Action Committee. In 2007, according to the Orlando Sentinel, investigators arrested a Florida man who used his roommate's computer to accumulate more than 5,000 pornographic images and videos of children, some as young as newborns and the oldest only 6. The man told other people he preferred child victims between the ages of 0 and 12 and that he liked to hear the children scream. This is a perfect example of the evil a man is capable of committing and the hideous world of pornography. Some, but not all, perpetrators are pedophiles and child molesters. Some people end up there after becoming desensitized to the images in adult pornography and needing something new in order to become aroused. David G. Heffler, a psychotherapist who is appointed by courts to counsel child pornography offenders, says, and I quote, "Many men told me they started out looking at adult porn and never intended to look at children. But after looking at adult porn for a long time, they got bored. They wanted to try something different. They started looking at children. Then they can't get enough of it." Once a child is the victim of child pornography, that image is forever out in the internet, on video, or in pictures for the entire world to see. Innocence and privacy cannot be restored after the exploitation. Child victims feel powerless and worthless. Child pornography has become prominent and is the gateway to harming children. Adults producing, purchasing, and sharing and indulging in child pornography must be exposed and punished to the fullest extent of the law. Please support SB 169. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 169. Welcome back, Mr. Barcher.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Dale Barcher, registered lobbyist with the Family Heritage Alliance Action. We do rise in support of SB 169. Although we might see this as a baby step, it is a step in the right direction. We would ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. For the proponents, 169. Any other proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents to Senate Bill 169? Are there opponents? Seeing no opponents, any questions from the committee? Senator Bradford.
I was going to move the amendment, if I could, so we could...
If you have any questions, and then I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Let's check for questions, and we'll get back to you. A question, Senator Rush.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would direct this question to the Attorney General's office, if I could, even though they didn't testify, but...
He made the mistake of staying in the room?
He did.
Mr. McGuigan, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this really doesn't pertain to the proposed law here, but in the Bill 169 on line 7, and I don't know whether you have that available to you there.
I do, Senator.
Okay. I had the unfortunate opportunity of trying a child pornography case a number of years ago, and a number of the elements had to do with what I think at the time they referred to as naturist magazines, which showed children in family groups and that, and I thought we probably were going to resolve that issue with an appeal, but the jury found him not guilty based on those magazines. But I'm wondering about line 7, whether an activity that involves nudity on children without any further sexual acts is probably legal, or whether we need to look at more changing that part too, in order to, in your opinion.
Go ahead.
Senator Rush, I think we all have the naked bathtub picture from when we were a baby. And prosecutors aren't running around prosecuting those parents who took a photograph of their child bathing when they were an infant or at any other stage. In addition, I'll refer you back to your constitutional law course. Nudity has a certain level of First Amendment protection. That's why a nude painting generally is not considered pornography. In addition to that, the Supreme Court has a community standards requirement. And so between the First Amendment protections, the community standards, I think your general nude photograph that doesn't depict more than that is generally not going to be considered child pornography. Did I answer your question in a roundabout way, Senator?
Mr. Chairman, I understand what you're saying. I'm still wondering, and I'm not maybe even expecting an answer, whether we ought to look at that line as far as changing that to make sure that we're talking about things that are truly child pornography. In other words, you know, the prosecutors in this case chose to bring it because there was such a large quantity, but they were... None of the magazines depicted any sexual activity. They showed family groups that were all nude. And so I let it go to the jury, but as I said, we didn't get an appeal on that issue because of the fact that the jury didn't, and probably properly so, didn't find that violated the statute.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, we'll
close public testimony and move to committee action and discussion. Senator Bradford.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the amendment 169FA.
Motion by Bradford, seconded by Norstrup to amend with 169FA. Any discussion on the motion to amend? Seeing none, those in favor of amending say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? 169 is so amended. Further discussion action on the bill as amended. Senator Monroe.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Senate Judiciary Committee pass Senate Bill 169 as amended.
Do pass motion, seconded by Senator Rush. Any discussion on the motion? Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think that one line could be refined a little bit because from the other side, I can see things coming down the pike. But I think this is a really good first step and probably be revisited and have that dealt with. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, the motion is do pass as amended. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Valley.
Aye.
Rush.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Heinert. Bradford.
Aye.
Norstrup.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye. Motion carried.
Move consent.
A motion from Senator Norstrup for consent. Second to that? Seconded by Senator Rush. Any further discussion on the consent motion? Seeing none, those in favor of consent calendar say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried. 169 as amended will go on the consent calendar tomorrow. Even though it was amended, tomorrow's crossover day, so that bill will be on the consent calendar tomorrow. All right. Any further business for the committee? We have a busy schedule, important bills to hear Thursday. See you all Thursday at 8 o'clock. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Motion by Senator Rush, seconded by Senator Monroe. Discussion on the motion, hearing none. All in favor of adjournment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? We are